talk about this and what you're most concerned about, why you're willing to go to jail.
Yeah, I, like Tim said, the Lac-Mégantic really struck me, that explosion and the dangers that were happened in 2013. And then a year later, I heard about this this whistleblower that was fired for not protecting. He was checking some brakes, and the brakes. He was fired for delaying that. And the third thing that happened was right by my daughter's school, an oil tanker car derailed, and that was a mile from my daughter's school, and that was the straw that broke my my back. I couldn't do it anymore to be that close to danger, 1 mile from my daughter's school.
Lac-Mégantic in Quebec, which killed in 2013 47 people when the train exploded and derailed.
Yes. And so seeing this same situation happen so close to my daughter's school was something that made me decide to go to sign up for Action Camp and learn to climb. And that's where I met Patrick Mazza and Liz Spory. And the three of us decided that we were going to join with two others and erect a tripod to stop a train, because we absolutely felt that this was the literal thing we had to do, to put ourselves in front of a train, to say, we will not take this anymore.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Abby Brockway, co-defendant in Delta 5 case, and Tim DeChristopher, founder of the Climate Disobedience Center. And we'll post online interview with Tim DeChristopher about the Oregon standoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today's guests are representatives of Portland Tenants United, who will talk about our housing crisis and the Housing Justice Rally in March to take place at Portland City Hall later on this week.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Real Music explores the live interplay between sound and image, music, and culture. Saturday, January 16th will be The Theory of Obscurity, a film about the residents, released in 2015. Don Hardy's film tells the story of the group's start in rural Louisiana, its artistic awakening in the late 60s, San Francisco, and follows its members to present day, where they are all still actively creating and performing. That's January 16th at 9:30 p.m. at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, on Thursday, January 14th at 7 p.m., KBOO at the Clinton will show Freedom on My Mind, How Voting Rights Were Won in Mississippi, with post-film Poetic Justice, open mic poetry event with poet and MC John Slaughter. Freedom on My Mind chronicles the complex and compelling history of the Mississippi voter registration struggles of 1961 to 1964. The interracial nature of the campaign, the tensions and conflicts, the fears and hopes. Again, that's Freedom on My Mind, Thursday, January 14th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To America is be true to what you said on paper. Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid. With each passing year, the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. become more and more necessary to remember. With this in mind, the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, there will be a variety of local and regional choirs, performers, and entertainers, all paying homage to the work and legacy of Dr. King and our efforts to keep his dream alive. So remember, Monday, January the 18th, at the Highland Christian Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and of course, right here on KBOO FM radio.
The greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Mary's Woods, presenting its second annual Martin Luther King Jr. celebration with a talk by civil rights leader and friend of Dr. King, Dr. C.T. Vivian. Dr. Vivian will speak at 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 16th, at the Chapel of the Holy Names at Mary's Woods in Lake Oswego. More at maryswoods.com.
Good morning. Today is Monday, January 11th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Community Radio, 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River. In Portland, it's 90.7, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio, and my name is Cecil Prescott. In 2010, in New York State, a gubernatorial candidate became an internet phenomenon by repeating over and over at every question, "The rent is too damn high." Jimmy McMillan thus reflected the concerns and attitude of many people. Here in Oregon, we continue to see the concerns of working people as they struggle to find adequate housing. Today we'll talk about housing and the move that people have made to organize tenants with representatives from the Portland Tenants United. Joining us this morning are Margot Black and Joe Clement. And good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So briefly, do people find the rent is too damn high?
Yeah, the rents have been going up at record levels in Portland. Some of our census tracts have had the highest rent increases in the last year, 10 years even, I think. And I have experienced, you know, $100, $200 rent increases within a year, year and a half. I've moved around a few times in the last several years because of that.
And, you know, in addition, when you mentioned census tracts that have had the rent too high, one of them that could actually least afford it because it has more of our low and middle income wage people is East Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And it has least amount of infrastructure to support the people who are there, so and the least amount of good-paying jobs.
And a lot of those people are there because they were already pushed out of close-in Portland, and now it's about to happen again. To them.
And Margot, before we came on the air, you mentioned briefly about a legislative forum that happened in East Portland this past weekend. I passed by it. I meant to go, but when I passed by there, it seemed to be hundreds of people there. Tell us about that, and then maybe tell us, one of you, about Portland Tenants United.
Yeah, so the legislative town hall was organized by Representatives Alyssa Cunningire and Rob Noss from Portland. And I believe there were 14 members of the House and Senate, including Tina Kotek, our House Speaker. And there were 25 invited speakers, some who are sharing their personal experiences of renting in the city of Portland, and then other housing justice organizers who had some policy recommendations. We heard we just heard some of the most heart-wrenching stories, a lot of very emotional testimony about the violence of no-cause evictions and the trauma that that can have on a person and on a family. We heard some very moving testimony from Melissa Madrigal, who told us about her friend Paul, who had a no-cause eviction that he tried to fight, and he tried to find housing. He couldn't, and the day before he was supposed to move out, he committed suicide. Katrina Holland from the Community Alliance of Tenants corroborated that they are getting more and more calls into their hotline of people who are going through no-cause evictions and having feelings of suicidal feelings and threats of self-harm, because not only are people not able to find replacement housing in their communities, which I think is a really important piece of recognizing housing as a human right, is not separating people from their communities. But just that vulnerability of being a good tenant, you know, paying your rent, being a good neighbor, feeling like you have a place to call home and having the rug pulled out from under you without any reason or remedy available to you is really traumatizing. We heard from a psychologist who talked about the sort of long-term trauma that he treats patients for who have gone through events of housing instability, you know, no-cause evictions or I would just say involuntary displacement, whether it's a yes. no-cause eviction or mm-hmm. it's a rent increase that you can't afford. And frankly, even, for-cause evictions, especially for-cause evictions that are caused by, you know, not being able to pay the rent. Well, why are people not able to pay the rent? Mm-hmm. You know, it's because the rent is too high. And, you know, I met with a woman a couple weeks ago, single mother of two, who is working, and she receives child support and the money kind of comes in and fits and spurts throughout the month. And she was $50 short on rent. They don't accept partial rent. So then it became late. So now she's $150 short because of the $100 late right. charge, which she pays pretty much every month because she can't get it all together at the same time. So that's a hindrance. And then she got the 7 days to pay or get out. And she said, I can have it all on the, you know, one day later. And they said, we don't do that. But they said, as long as you bring everything to, you know, to eviction court with you, we'll take your money and let you stay and put you on probation. Well, she showed up with all the money in a money order, you know, the full rent plus the late charge plus the court fees now that she had to pay. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, no, we don't do that. We don't. You know, we'll take your money. They took her money, but they wouldn't let her stay. They said you have to be out by, November 11th. And
the court upheld this.
Well, so the way evictions work is that, you know, you have the first hearing where you can request a trial.
Right.
And you're encouraged to, you know, work things out with your landlord before you request a trial. And it was in the working things out with the landlord, which was really the attorney. And mm-hmm. she said, they would take my money and I would be able to stay and I'd be on a 3-month probation. And the attorney was like, no, we don't do that. We never let people stay. If you go to trial, you're going to lose and it's going to be even more expensive and you'll have an eviction on your record. And so you just need to move and we'll take the eviction off and we'll take your money. One of her children is developmentally disabled. Mm-hmm. The other is in first grade. So she moved. She moved out by the day that they agreed on. Her first grader had to, both her kids had to go and live with their father, which meant her first grader had to change schools in the middle of November. And mom is now sleeping on a couch. And this, you know, and I met with this woman and, you know, and she is working so hard and she is trying so hard. And as a formerly single mom myself, I just know how you just are trying so hard to right your ship and you're doing all the right things. And then you just, you know, you just get kicked while you're down. And so now, you know, here she is back sleeping on somebody's couch and she feels like she can't even go find housing because the day the eviction came off her record is the same day a $3,000 bill came from the apartment management company. They charged her a lease break fee, $1,500 lease break fee. They evicted her and charged her a $1,500 lease break fee. They charged to replace the dishwasher that was broken when she moved in and is even on her move-in paperwork. Mm-hmm. They charged her $800 to replace the carpets that needed to be replaced because her toilet overflowed 2 days after she moved in. And she can't, you know, what is her recourse? Her recourse is hiring an attorney and going to court. They actually, she paid $1,000 deposit. They didn't even subtract that off of her deposit.
Which is actually against the law to try to hold on to a deposit without just cause.
But what do you do?
True.
That's true. I mean, there's so much of this that is against the law. And I spoke to an attorney about it after it all happened. And she just said, you know, this was so, it's so preventable. But we don't have the resources. You know, this gal doesn't know who to call. She doesn't have, you know, if she can't get a legal aid attorney because they're, you know, I'm sure they can only serve one out of every 10 or 100 people who need it and qualify. Right. You know, then she doesn't have the resources to hire an attorney. And now, she, you know, she's sleeping on a couch and her kids are living across town. Who has the fortitude to enter into a legal battle where the cards are stacked against you anyway?
So first, it reveals something, that story reveals something about the power dynamics. Mm-hmm. And also, I think about the need of people beginning to organize. And this is where I think your organization comes in. Tell us a little bit about the genesis of your organization and its purposes and goals.
Well, the Portland Tenants United has formed out of a kind of diverse community of people that came out of the Portland Renters Assemblies, which KBOO did a lot of promotion for this last year. Some of the major Facebook groups that have formed around this issue local to Portland, Portland PDX Renters Unite, and That's a Goddamn Shed are two notable ones.
Continue.
And KB community is also, in addition to like offering this radio infrastructure, also just the people have been coming because we hold our meetings here at KBOO. It's a real kind of community endeavor. And so the people who just happen to be at the station are now realizing, hey, this is happening here at KBOO. And that is where the people have come from. And the impetus for this grew out of the renters assemblies where people were talking about, let's get organized. Let's actually become an effective block of people. And we have been having meetings and basically staging our opening and our open house, which we'll be talking about later too.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 if you are in Points East. And in Philomath along the Willamette River Valley, it is 104.3. I am here with my co-host, Cecil Charles Prescott. I am your other host, Celeste Carey. And we're here with Margot Black, Joe Clement, and we're talking about the power balance between renters and, renters, leasers, and those who own the property, and evening the playing field, addressing some of the major inequities and major injustices that we find within the rental community here in Portland. If you want to join in the conversation with a question or a comment regarding rents or ways that you can address your challenges, please call in. The number is 503-231-8187. And we do have a person who has been waiting patiently. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning. I attend a lot of the renters' rights issues, and I've been involved in housing issues for a lot of years. I'm a member of the Community Alliance of Tenants. Fox Management evicted me on a no cause, and right now I'm struggling to get some extra time. However, one of the things I found was a company called LegalShield.com. Again, it's LegalShield.com, so just like Night Shield. Go to the library, find it out, call them up. They offer a program where you pay so much a month. Mine is less than $20 a month. And I'm already talking to an attorney. This is my first time, but they hook you up with the best lawyers, and go to bat for you. So my interview with them said, yeah, you have more than one issue here. So I don't know how this is going to pan out. But I went and talked to other attorneys, one of whom was a prominent renter lawyer here, and he wouldn't take it. And what I found out from these people was if an attorney thinks he can't make enough money, they'll discourage you from taking it. So I'm back in the game now. And, you know, the things they've done, they are criminals. They are criminals. And we need a rent strike. We need a statewide, citywide rent strike. And I'm moving to Salem because there's no housing for me up here. You know, I may end up living in a tent, but that's okay. But I'm going to be working down there with some people who are focused on the legislation that we're taking to the state legislature this month, to deal with no cause evictions, rent control. You know, there's four issues on the plate. So, but check out Legal Shield. If nothing else, just go and look at it. Talk to somebody, see what they say. But yeah, there is help. So I don't know. This is my first time, but they sounded pretty good.
Thank you,
so I
Leah.
Just wanted to share that with everybody, okay?
No, thank you, Leah.
Yes,
you know what would really be helpful, Margo and Joe, is if you could define a few terms. Those people struggling with it already know what a no-cause eviction or no-cause release is. But there's a couple of terms that I think most of us may not be familiar with. So if you could define, you know, like no-cause lease and no-cause eviction, and then there was a couple of other phrases I haven't popped back in my head here. If you could define for those listeners so they can get a bigger idea of what we're dealing with.
Okay, so when we say no-cause eviction, it's usually not, it usually doesn't involve the sheriff or the courtroom. It is usually a letter from the landlord that says that you have, you know, 30 or 60, and now in Portland, 90 days to vacate the premises, and they don't have to give you a reason for that. Now, when you are in a lease, you're protected from that, but they can still show up in the form of "we're not renewing your lease" letters.
Mm-hmm.
That has happened to me twice. "We're not renewing your lease, and so when your lease expires, you know, you have to be out, and we're not giving you a reason for that." So that's a no cause. And then a for cause would be, well, for a cause. So, you know, non-payment of rent is probably
making too much noise.
Yeah, violating the lease.
Some kind of way violating the lease.
And so,
which doesn't have to be criminal. It doesn't have to be a criminal thing.
Oh, definitely.
It could be
not.
Like you have a carpet out in front of your apartment and they don't want anything different from what they've got there.
Right. And one of the things you'll hear is that the for cause are more expensive or harder work or higher risk for the landlords, and so they just give no cause evictions. But there is, you know, the way that this normally works, with the exception of non-payment of rent or like a sort of a dangerous situation. But let's say somebody's playing their music too loud or just, you know, being a nuisance neighbor, they'll get a 30-day notice to leave, but for cause, you know, and the cause will be listed in the letter, and they have 14 days to remedy that. And if they remedy that, they can stay.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with non-payment of rent. I think you're just given a shorter amount of time to remedy, and then you can stay. And none of that actually requires going to the courthouse and getting an order. It's just the same kind of notice. Whereas a no cause, you don't have to have any reason. So you have no right to remedy, and you have no right to remain, and you don't even know what happened. So those are the two terms.
Now, I do want to add that for the no cause, sometimes owners of the property will use that when they want to do renovations and they just want people gone. So it's not always an adversarial relationship, but it's not always a beneficial relationship either. And that's something that's really important to have out there in case somebody wants to say, well, I'm a good landlord. And you may be, but you don't. If a person doesn't take into account the effect of a no cause or no remedy eviction notice on the tenants who are doing well or are marginal and trying, then they're not being a good landlord.
So what you mentioned is what we would call either a good cause or a just cause. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I would put under, file under like owner repossession. Mm-hmm. You know, they're either going out of business or changing their business model or, you know, renovating. And I would say that in that situation, you know, that would, so there is a cause there. The cause is that they want to renovate. Like you said, it's not adversarial. Other jurisdictions that have, that don't allow no cause evictions, but only just cause evictions, would provide relocation assistance in that instance. I mean, they recognize that the cost and trauma of the involuntary displacement of the tenant. So I would say at least relocation assistance. I would also advocate for an impact assessment. I mean, I see that somebody wants to renovate their property, but I also think that when we're talking about that displacing a, you know, a family or a senior or somebody with chronic health or disability issues, they should, you know, they should have more time and flexibility in that.
Joe?
I want to point out that in Portland, we have an ordinance that was put in place, I think, in the late 90s or early 2000s when it was popular to flip apartment buildings into condos, and that if you were specifically evicted for that kind of renovation, that you were supposed to get at least moving fees, if not some other sort of compensation. But as is happening now, people get kicked out, and all that's really happening is they're being renovated into higher rental apartments, or they're, in my case, I got kicked out of a house cut up into apartments in Selwood that was torn down and then built into giant houses that I'm never going to live in. So I just wanted to kind of point out that there is some recognition locally around some of these issues, but it doesn't go far enough.
So I want to get back because to a point I wanted you to expand upon, because most of the time in the earlier call, it talked about her case, and individual can talk about their cases, and someone might have a good landlord, not so good landlord, and all these things, there's a certain power dynamics that power imbalance. And so what are some of the challenges to even the playing field? How may tenants begin to organize so that they can at least be able to that the playing field is somewhat more equal in terms of challenging the laws and tenancy?
Well, I think the elimination of no-cause terminations or evictions, however we want to put it, is a low-hanging fruit that I think evens the playing field by making housing less of just a property and commodity that the people with money and power to move them around get to make decisions about, and that it starts to have to be addressed in terms that recognize that housing is people's homes.
So how did you challenge, you know, the concerns of people who might say, well, I don't want to get involved, or I don't want to make troubles because... Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a real challenge because as long as we have no cause evictions on the books and unlimited, you know, ability to increase rent, people are really scared. They're scared to take action. They're scared, you know, even when they have the good landlords, they're scared to rock the boat by, you know, maybe asking their good landlord to be a representative for, you know, what a better way looks like. And this has been a challenge. I mean, I think that this comes down to we need to build momentum. We need to build our numbers. We need to, you know, try to encourage people to recognize the power in numbers. I think if we can at least first just expose the trauma and violence and injustice of no cause evictions and get rid of them. Once we have protection from essentially retaliatory, you know, no cause evictions, it'll be a lot easier for us to organize and take action. Because right now, people think that, I mean, they don't even want to ask for their leaky toilet to be fixed because they could, you know, need to find a new house to live in.
Yeah, I think that people are scared to ask for repairs and because of the no cause evictions. But I think one thing that really holds people in that fear mentality also is just this: they've unlearned the dignity of having your own home, and if you've been a renter your whole life, as a lot of people who are in rental situations are, they were probably born into a rental situation. you're convinced that housing is just somebody else's property. And really, you know, you have a lot of reasons to believe so. But I think that in a way, we have to start asserting a different vision and a different set of values, even if the ways of the world right now don't recognize them. And that breaks down the barriers between people wanting to organize and wanting to say, hey, if they're going to evict you, we'll sit in your apartment and not let them do it unless they pull us all out.
I agree. We have to help them see that there's a better way and recognize that it's not like so crazy and radical. There are other countries that, you know, that don't have this private land ownership model where you have, you know, that such a huge difference between the haves and have-nots. And I think we can aspire to that.
Now, we do have some callers online, but when we come back, I want to talk about what good relationships you do have with some landlords, because I know that we're not going to get as far as we need to go if we don't have allies on both sides. But we'll go to our next caller. Thea, good morning.
Good morning, y'all. I love K-Brew. Thank you for being there. In July 2014, I received my first no-cause eviction from Princeton Property. I've lived there about almost 5 years, was involved with my neighbors, my community, that's my family. Received a no-cause eviction, had no idea what that was, you know, no clue or anything. Once I started picking up the phone and making phone calls to 211, you know, finding out my rights, finding a lawyer, this and that, I filed for a reasonable accommodation because I'm disabled. Well, after I filed that, all of a sudden I got for-cause termination. I got denied. So to me, it said, due to disorderly conduct and interference with management, I've never done anything like that, ever. I have a daughter that's 9 years old. I'm involved in the community. I work at Albina Head Start. I teach our children, okay? Since July 2014, my family's gone through hell. We've been to court 20 times plus. We had to move into the Wimbledon Prime Properties over there. They knew our situation, what we were coming from, and we moved in. They didn't clean our carpets. They didn't do it. And so from day one, I was like, wait a minute, here we go again. Really? We rented the place sight unseen, $11.90 a month, no bedroom or anything. We had Portland Mobile Housing Unit help us pay that deposit. That was April 18th. By July, I already had the city inspector there violating them 7 times. Then I got another no-cause eviction. So when you talk about people not wanting to report problems about their apartment, that's true. Because people all around me were like, oh, well, I don't want to say anything. Well, I come to Portland because I speak up. And when I moved here 20 years ago, everyone spoke up that I was around. And that's why one of the reasons I love Portland. And one of your people said on there, it's power of numbers. We do have the power. We just can't. We're scared and in fear, so we don't speak up. I will always speak up. And it's not just for me. It's for everybody when I speak up. Now, one thing I found, I just, by the way, thank you, God, got a place from a private owner on the 23rd. My family moved in. But this is interesting, I think you'll find. The last time I was in court, I met a woman. Now, this is not factual on my own research, but she was telling me that this lawyer group, Bittner and House, who I've been fighting with this whole time, own the property. So that's in their best interest. That just threw me for a curveball. Not only that, but when we went to the Wimbledon, they were fighting us there, too. So they already knew we were coming there. You know what I mean? And I am just, I cannot describe to you what my family has been through and what all families have been through. I showed up at the protest at Rosa Parks. When Community Alliance of Tenants showed up, and I do what I can. But the problem that we're having with 211 and keeping up with what's going on here is they're not educated. They don't know. And so I call 211. They tell me to call another number. That number tells me to call 211.
Right.
We got a situation going on here, right? And I know some families, they just gave up. They would go to the homeless shelter. I'm a fighter. I'm blessed like that. I didn't give up. I'm not saying one's bad.
Well, I'm glad you don't give up. And there's people like you maybe who would give some good suggestions to, well, here's one place I think you could really help. You have learned where some of the gaps are in 211. Perhaps some information and showing them how the call takers there could be better educated so that they can serve better. Because you got the spunk and you got the knowledge.
Someone else speak on the line that... I would call the mayor's office. Like, hi, I'd like Charles Hill to come to court with me, please. I voted for him. See what's really going on, right? So I leave a message, speak very clearly. I'm not putting down the gentleman that called. He said he left me a message. My name is Mustafa. I'm a contingent for the mayor's office. I said, well, excuse me for my ignorance. What is that? Is that a paid position? He said, oh, ha-ha, I've only been here a week. He didn't know what Albina Head Start was. He didn't know anything about. He's not familiar with the town, and he's representing the mayor's office? I'm sorry. This is just... this town is growing so fast, and I'm getting gentrified. You know, I've never lived out. Now I'm past 100. That's where I'm at now. And you know what? I'll make community wherever I am. But thank you for being there. And we all just have to band together. That's what I've learned living in Portland. We all got to band together.
Yes,
right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Thea, I hope that you come to our march and rally on Friday, Portland Tenants United. I mean, we're going to take a direct action approach and really use strength in numbers. And we've already had a victory with that, with resisting an eviction. And I think Thea points out another, another really big problem is that even when you can get a lawyer, and it sounds like, you know, she was able to get one and she was able to get a reasonable accommodation, a lot of what's happening is perfectly legal, and the resources that are available are inadequate, and it's not a failure of 211. It's a failure of us not having actual we don't have the infrastructure to actually protect tenants. You know, mm-hmm.
It's just happening so fast.
Yeah,
I think that we would have the information. It's just happening so rapidly. People are stuck on, like, Human Solutions was going to let us help us move into our new place, but they said there's three of you for a three bedroom. I said, well, I've been living in a no bedroom for $1,190. This one's $1,250. Please, I mean, help us. And they couldn't help us due to the federal regulation from where they get their funding.
Right.
So
right. It's
just all backwards. And through pain comes change. And unfortunately, that's what we're all going to have to go through. You know, people just up and move and leave. I'm not going. I love Portland. I'm not leaving. They're not going to kick me out. But the real thing that I feel like I've been discriminated against, clearly. Mm-hmm. Why me at the apartment complex of 30? All my neighbors were like, why you? You're the nicest neighbor we've ever had.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm involved. I watch for my whole community. And I just, it's inhumane. It's a criminal act. It's a criminal act. You know? It's a criminal act. And they need to realize that these corporations, Bittner and House, whoever they are, playing games with people's life. That's what they're doing.
Well, thank you, Thea. I want to give Margot and Joe a chance to answer.
Course.
We're going to go to the
of
next
course.
Caller. But thank you so
much, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Too.
And let's go to the next caller.
Joanne.
Joanne, good morning.
Yes, hello. Here it is again. We're going to be celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday again. And Celeste, I remember some time back you saying to us on one of your programs, if you have nothing to die for, you have nothing to live for.
No, I don't think that was me.
For a long time. I am sick and tired of hearing the same old talk and the same old new talk on the cable talk programs. What you folks don't get is you need to stop talking, stop being mental, get out on the streets and being physical. You activists disgust me.
Well, Joanna, I'm really sorry. You know, we would love to see you there. All of us just don't sit and talk. But you also have to remember, everybody has a role, you know, and some people are the foot soldiers and some people are the loudspeakers. But we are all of them in this spectrum. We have Joe Clement here, who is both out there foot-wise and behind the mic. And so can you give her a little bit more? And not to mention the fact this hasn't gone away. So we're going to talk about it till it goes away.
So, Joe.
Yeah, I think that, the people who are talking about, for one thing, we have to talk about it for people to know about it. There's going to be no one in the streets if no one's talking about that. And that's what we're here today to talk about, is how we are going to go out into public, out into the streets, as it were, and voice these demands and start to make those connections in a face-to-face way. The rally is going to be this Friday, 4:30 at City Hall. We're going to rally for about an hour. We're going to hear speakers and some music, and then we are going to go on a short march.
So what are the points of the rally? What are the demands?
So the theme of the rally is to, eviction-free 2016, end retaliation and discrimination. And so there's so many problems and vulnerabilities in the power imbalance between landlord and tenant. But at one end of the housing cycle, just trying to get into housing, you know, we have the Fair Housing Act that says that you can't discriminate based on, race, color, creed, family status, marital status, source of income. But there's, you know, we're letting the fox watch the hen house on that. We let the landlords pretty much put whatever screening criteria they want on their applications. Now, of course, they're not allowed to to say, you know, that they won't rent to certain types of people, but then they require, you know, credit scores of 750 and, you know, 10 years of perfect rental history and, you know, and three times the income. And, you know, basically they become humps to jump through that just create more and more and more disparate impact. We don't even have, this was news to me, I'm so upset to have found out that we don't actually have a law on the books that says that the first qualified applicant has to be given the apartment, but that they can give, you know, to the best qualified applicant. And to me, that just, how is that not just giving an absolute pass to, you know, racism or classism or, mm-hmm. you know, when you're going to pick between, say, a single mom of three and a married, you know, professional couple and both of them qualify, you know, and the married couple doesn't have any kids and, you know, of course you're going to go with them, right? And so we don't have this, we don't have any protection for people to just to get into housing. And I feel like that's really important is that, you know, a lot of folks are now are homeless or in shelters or in hotels or staying with friends because they can't even get into housing because of credit and income and past rental history. So that's the, you know, that's kind of the discrimination piece to help, you know, people get into housing. And then the retaliation piece is trying to keep people in their housing and make sure that if they ask for repairs, that they defend their rights or they go on a radio program like this and, you know, talk about overthrowing the system that they won't get.
they won't get an eviction notice.
Yeah. And, you know, and I got a I'm in a lease, but I got a lease violation notice after a media event. And, you know, I'd had a hammock out, as did many of my neighbors have, you know, lawn furniture
well,
and stuff.
If they and pick they, on you exclusively, then that is well, called they, discrimination or harassment right, or retaliation.
Right. I took it as a, you know, we're watching you. And I thought, mm-hmm. go ahead, bring it.
Well, and you bring up something, and I know we have another caller, but I think it's really important for folks to hear this so that we look, they know we're looking at both sides. Now, we're talking about people who are struggling, but they're doing the best they can to keep the rent on time. They're not causing trouble. They're not damaging property, and they are not committing criminal acts on the property. Because I know for some landlords, they'll say, oh, but we need no cause if we've got criminal activity on the property. Well, in Oregon, I know in your lease, you have a lease addendum that says you will not commit criminal activity. So should that be actually documented? That is not part of this whole dynamic. This is not something that, that a landlord would have trouble with. But we're talking about not people who have, not even people who have criminal history or, as people say, legal history. If you have legal history, you still need to have a place to rent. So the question then is, if you are not engaged in anything currently, that should not be held against you. And that should not be yet another challenge to being able to rent. So when we talk about the population that's struggling, just so people can hear you say it, it should be a no-brainer. Tell us who we're talking about. When, you know, the population, people like ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely having a disparate impact on, well, everybody. But like I said, the more barriers you have, the worse. So absolutely, somebody with any kind of criminal background, somebody with a previous eviction, you know, somebody with who's ever had any kind of financial trouble. You know, the credit score thing is especially galling because a lot of people have poor credit because they prioritize paying their rent on time. Of course, when you pay your rent on time, that doesn't actually make your credit any better.
No,
you know?
It doesn't.
Nor is renting a form of credit. So using credit shouldn't be one of our screening criteria at all. But people of color, single families, people who are non-native English speakers. But yeah, any bad marks, you know, even a no cause eviction. One of the saddest things we're seeing is that you can be the tenant who, you love your neighbors, and they love you. You pay your rent on time. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. But when you go to try to find housing and you have a no cause eviction, the landlord is, you know, they're like, well, what was it? What was it about? You know, they think there must be something, and they don't want to rent to you with that no cause notice. And in a case where it is sort of secretly retaliatory, and I say secretly because, of course, it's illegal to give a retaliatory eviction. So it's not like when you call the landlord, they'll say that was the reason. but they will say lots of other things, you know, whatever they can say. And the fellow whose eviction we were able to prevent this week, you know, it was because he was very persistent and, you know, assertive about these repairs. And when he did, you know, when he couldn't fight his no cause through the legal channels and through the Fair Housing Council, he tried to find housing in November, and he didn't have good rental references. He's lived there 33 years and paid his rent on time every month and never had a complaint from the neighbor, and yet couldn't get new housing. Because the landlords, who knows what they're saying, right? There are no regulations on that. There is nothing that can't be asked or said in that conversation. And so when you have any kind of hits on you at all, it's really hard to get into housing.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. Our guests today are Margot Black and Joe Clements from the Portland Tenants United. They will sponsor a action at City Hall this Friday, January
15th
at
4:30. But events start at 2:30 at Vaz on MLK Boulevard. It's
not far from here.
The Workers Center.
Yeah, so Vaz and Right to Dream 2 and Right to Survive and Sisters of the Road and Portland Tenants United, this is a joint action. We'll start at 2:30 after a soapbox event of just flyering and kind of getting some hype out in downtown, hosted by Don't Shoot Portland in the morning. And Don't Shoot Portland is involved in all of our organizations are involved in the whole day. We'll march downtown, rally at 4:30, and then do our march afterwards.
And how might people contact you or find out more about your events? Like you on Facebook?
We're on Facebook. We're working right now. We're an all volunteer staff, so we're getting our website up. But if they go to pdxtu.org, that will right now redirect you right to Facebook, and hopefully very soon our website. And info@pdxtu.org will send your We'll get one of our organizers, will be in contact with you.
Great.
Yes.
So let's go to a call.
Carolyn. Good morning, Carolyn.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to congratulate you all on this. I think it's incredibly important. I think it's an issue that is much more impactful in our society as a whole than just negatively affecting renters in themselves. Using an example from gasoline prices, for example, the Senate will say, well, if we lower the price of gasoline 50 cents, and people just save a few cents at the pump, what an amazing impact this has for our economy. Wow, more people are buying more things at stores, our economy is doing better, et cetera. And if you can imagine, if people don't have to pay 75% of their income on their rent, they have enough money to go to the neighborhood salon. They have enough money to go and buy things from someone who has struggled to open their own small business. They have enough money to go to the restaurant. They have enough money to go to the pub. They have enough money to see movies. They have enough money to travel. They have enough money to buy their kids a new pair of shoes, because they have enough money to...
They have enough money for heat.
So they can have more income to invest with. I mean, and just because of a very few selfish landlords and property barons wanting to get as much money as they possibly can in a predatory economic situation, it impacts the rest of our whole entire society. Like that mom and pop store down the street, if more people are buying things there, maybe they can afford a couple part-time employees, that maybe some college students that need the extra money because they're struggling to get their degree. Or maybe, you know,
somebody. Or maybe one of the mothers who needs a job.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it helps. It hurts our local businesses. I mean, somebody who says, oh, this house, I'm a homeowner, I'm a small business owner, this doesn't affect me, I shouldn't get involved. Hey, it does affect you, because your clients don't have the money to buy your products anymore because they're giving it to some rich land baron. I think that housing and health care are a fundamental human right. I think that although we live in a capitalistic society and people have the free agency to make money and do real estate investments, there should be a line drawn in the sand to where apartment rentals are protected, and there should be like a 35% or 40% profit cap limit on what your operating and property expenses are.
That's very generous.
That is very generous. I'm thinking 45%, that's like half of what I'm paying. That's too much.
A lot of money. Look at the Dollar Tree business model. I mean, Dollar Tree, they're more profitable than Rite Aid, but they sell on quantity, not quality. So if you are a property investor looking to rent apartments, your model should be quantitative, not qualitative. But then there's like this law, the profit cap could only apply to apartment rentals. It wouldn't apply to townhomes. It wouldn't apply to condominiums. It wouldn't apply to the home real estate market. And it wouldn't apply to commercial property. I mean, all those things as they currently are can continue on as they are, but just apartment rentals. And if the apartment rentals see, oh, I have a property cap, well, you know, I have an incentive to work with the state housing authorities to maybe develop some new properties, quantitative instead of high-quality developed. So that would release a huge burden upon the state, because the amount of money that the more that rent increases, the more money the state and our economies and the counties are responsible to help subsidize housing costs, the more money they have to try to fund to develop affordable housing projects, the greater the burden it is upon our society as a whole. People don't have money to save in the banks. People don't have money to spend in our local economies. People suffer. So this is if just save the few.
But just make sure you make it to the march and rally this Friday.
Yeah, come out with us, Carolyn. We need another spokesman.
I happen to live in Salem, but I mean, because my rent's going up and up and up, and they give you a 6-month lease, and my lease is expiring in March, and then of course, once your lease expires, they sign you on as if you're a new person just coming in, so they can
dump your rent up
$75 a month instead of. You know what I mean? A $25 a month increment. So it's just obscene. So, I mean, if somebody could help me figure out who the legislative or who the Senate would be to bring these issues up to Governor Brown, because I know that she is interested in these types of things, and she's a big advocate for family safety, and she worked with child welfare, and she understands the importance of families being able to make ends meet. So, I mean,
Wait a minute, we need you to breathe for a moment, Carolyn, so Joe can jump in here and maybe help you out here. I can appreciate your excitement.
Thanks.
I appreciate a lot of what you're saying. I agree that the rental system, the whole idea of having an industry that's comprised of other people's homes is wealth extraction. Landlords get money not because they necessarily do anything. Owners get money not necessarily because they do anything, but because they have this political status in our society that allows them to stand between people and their homes. And I would, you know, I appreciate the idea that if we don't pay as much rent, we could pay more money. But I also like to think of if we didn't have to pay as much rent, we wouldn't have to work as much. And I think that when we talk about how Portland used to be cool and Portland used to be this place that supported creatives and DIY culture, that wasn't because we had more money. It's because we had more time to invest in our communities and our families and ourselves.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is at least as important as the money perspective on that. And in a way, I think it points towards the larger future that we want to build towards.
Okay, Marco?
Well, I would just also say, so Carolyn, I totally agree that it affects all of us, and I think one of the big challenges and a really important challenge is helping the homeowners and the business owners and people essentially who aren't struggling to write the rent check every month to see how this impacts them. It certainly impacts schools and the economy. I mean, our rent increase, my rent went up $250 a month. My take home pay went up about $30 a month, and for us that meant that my son couldn't take piano lessons, which is a bummer. It's not a crisis. I just want to point out some people are choosing between rent and food, rent and medicine, rent and heat.
Yes.
They are choosing housing. They're choosing to stay in housing that is making them sick, or housing where they are experiencing domestic violence. Yep. And that, you know, that can't, that that can't be good for any of us. You know, we want a safe, happy, healthy, productive society. And
it creates a burden on society.
It does. It creates a, I mean, I would like to look at how much our housing crisis is costing the state and asking, why is it okay that that is because landlords are essentially vacuuming money out of our wallets? Why aren't you putting that in check?
Hey, thank you so much. We're running,
running short of time, and we got another caller. Thank you. And we'll go to our, good morning, Deanna.
Good morning, and thank you so much for this very important conversation. And, of course, the things that Carolyn said are all very important. And I am going to be at the rally. I'm a member of the Portland Raging Grannies. We're all going
to be.
Yay!
And I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. I am always excited and eager to go and participate in an action, and my frustration continually has been, these actions make us feel good for a few minutes, and without specific future actions,
I think you've hit the nail on the head, and they're nodding their heads.
Okay. Are you going to A, ask for a letter writing campaign, or B, get people together to make pamphlets that we pass out to every single person we see on the street? This is a human right, and we have to change it. We have to go to Salem. We have to demand that there is an end to this kind of private ownership and take it out of the realm, I think, of one poor individual getting pulled out like happened last Friday, and heroically and happily the threat of so many people showing up shut that down. Well, we can't be always in acting at effect, right? We have to take the lead, and we have to demand something like back in when I lived in New York in the 70s, there was something called co-op housing. We can demand that the city and the state buy all, let's say, for example, I mean, on our way to socialism here, buy all privately owned apartment buildings, and all of that will be rent controlled. I lived in New York City where it was rent controlled for years and years, but not just rent control. We have to have someone that we can appeal directly to, not 1,000 different landlords, someone we can really leverage. When we do a rent strike, it's against the government, let's say, right? I'm just trying to throw out some ideas that we need to think very strategically and do the planning that you said, Margo, finding out exactly how much it costs for all this nonsense to go on. It's more than nonsense. It's criminal behavior, just as somebody else said. And we have to come out with these figures and statistics. It's a lot of homework. It's like what we've been doing in the environmental movement, you know, doing our homework, getting the research, and getting everybody involved.
Hey, so, thank you so much, Marco. Okay.
So I really agree with you. Thank you so much for your comments. Is it Deanna?
Deanna.
Deanna, and I'm so excited that you're going to be there on Friday. I agree. We can't just march in the streets. We really have to take action. What we're going to do at our rally on Friday is, and hopefully a little before that, is announce our open house, which will be January 30th. We're finalizing the details on that. But at the open house is will be, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about who we are and what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And, you know, what we need is we need people. We need people who are willing to do outreach, you know, who are willing to show up to these actions, who are willing to do the letter writing campaigns, who are willing to take the leadership on that. I mean, I really think it's got to be all hands on deck. And so, you know, what we are going to do on the 30th is essentially, you know, say, hey, all you people that showed up, we're so glad that you are here, and let's start doing the work. I think that we need to take a multi-pronged approach. I mean, I think a letter writing campaign to the government is great, but, you know, I know from the legislative town hall and from the prep meeting going into that, I was going to speak and then I didn't, that, you know, they have a few things that they're going to ask for. We are probably going to get a tiny piece of one of those things. It'll be, you know, the 30 days to notice to 90 days, and that is going to be a huge fight. And then in 2017 they'll be like, oh, that was too much work, you know, we already had historic change, now you have 90 days before you have to experience the most traumatic event of your life. And so we can't, you know, we can't just rely on our policymakers. You know, we need to really put the pressure on them. I agree that we can't just stop one eviction at a time. You know, we need to recognize this is the systemic issue it is. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, I'm a math teacher by day, which means I like to solve problems.
Yes.
And I don't want to just toil on it. You know, I want to push forward and I want a strategy and I want to see that it works. And I know that everybody else, you know, in the room feels the same way.
Okay. Thank you very much. Could I just make one more question about that?
No, we have 30 seconds.
Oh.
I'm sorry. So,
okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Email us.
And how did they get in touch with you again before we leave?
info@pdxtu.org.
Or you can find us on Facebook, where we have a more kind of active posting right now.
Yes. And if you do pdxtu.org, just the Facebook, or I'm sorry, www.pdxtu.org, that'll take you right to our Facebook page until our website goes up.
And so for everyone who wants to, again, Friday is the day.
Friday's the day.
And I just want to point out that of our 8 points of unity, the eighth one that we agreed to when we formed this kind of organizing committee is that the subjugation and exploitation of tenants by private landlords and moneyed interests must be challenged through organizing for alternative housing models such as public housing, collective ownership and management models, and cooperative living. And once we get the page up, you'll be able to see the full eight. I don't think we have the time to read it right now, but this is a tenants union that is aiming to be a tenants organization and not just something that manages the landlord's private property system.
Yeah, we don't want to react. We want to dismantle.
I like that. Hey, thank you so much, Margot Black and Joe Clemens from Portland Tenants United, for coming on More Talk Radio this morning and for organizing tenants. You have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. For Celeste Carey, this is Cecil Prescott. We wish you a good day.
Talking Earth, a show dedicated to showcasing our local poetry scene. Join hosts Patrick Picard, Barbara LaMorticella, and Walt Curtis for Talking Earth on the second and third Mondays of each month from 10 to 11 p.m. More information can be found on kboo.fm under schedule.
My landlord, a wealthy man, a living offering like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally in March organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors. If you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors. You know you should fight for a right for the common good.
I wish I was a mole in the ground.